This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. The Annie Fry Show YouTube live chat poll of the day is sponsored by Ruler Foods. Low prices, no coupons. Ruler Foods.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Happy Thursday. Going to be a stormy Thursday, so we hear. I think there's going to be some weather rolling into the area in the next few hours. We'll keep our eye on it and let you know if anything crazy is happening. I'm excited to have Hans von Spakovsky on with us at 12:25 today. So just in about 20 minutes from now, it'll probably be a little bit less than that. And we're going to talk to Hans about everything that has to do with this Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, hush money trial taking place in New York and what he's thought. There's a lot of talk and discussion right now about the jury selection, and we've seen, I think it's two jurors that had been selected have now been bumped. And how do you find somebody in New York that isn't biased for or against, probably against, Donald Trump? I'm not 100% sure how you do that. And I will wait and see how that materializes. But aside from the actual case that we are going to see unfold in the next weeks with Donald Trump, it will be interesting to see what Hans von Spakovsky has to say about what he's witnessed so far in that Manhattan trial. We're going to have Congressman Bost on as well at 1:25 today, and we're going to talk to him about the chaos that's existing in the House right now. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, being threatened by Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think Thomas Massie is another one. I think there's one more that is questioning or trying to move on that motion to vacate the chair. Or the speakership, I should say. And so where's that going to go? Is it helpful? How do you find somebody who's going to fill that spot that is going to appease the masses that need to be appeased? And by masses, I mean like a plus one majority. It's a little bit ridiculous. Here's Matt Whitaker on the juror selection.
50 of 92 of the first jurors were dismissed because they articulated that they could not be fair and impartial. I worry about the ones that are trying to be stealth and not admit. But you can tell not only their biases, but, you know, what's being poured into their head on a daily basis. If you're watching other networks, you know what those people on there are saying. There are not people that are giving you fair and impartial takes on these legal theories and on these legal cases. You know, but all of these jurors ultimately are going to have to continue to be investigated. Because remember, these names were given right before jury selection. So they have not had time to investigate. And so Facebook posts, Twitter, X, you know, wherever these folks are out there communicating, voting histories, all of that is going to be continued to be poured over. And so some of these could be exposed. And that's why you're seeing so many alternates being picked, because they're, I would imagine, one or two of these folks getting kicked off because they are hiding their true biases.
So as you know, there's a strike. You can strike somebody and you can do that. I think they were limited to 10 strikes, and it's anybody. Like, you didn't like the way they looked at you when they walked in the room. You get 10 of those. The rest of them have to be done via bias. Now, there's a lot. If you have ever posted anything political in your social media and it's accessible by these people, and they have the experts who are going over the jury selection to make sure that you're not putting anybody up there who has a great vendetta against Donald Trump or somebody whose profile picture has a MAGA hat on, you're not getting on the jury. So people are going to either have to scrub their social media, or they're going to have to be people who have kept their political opinions about Donald Trump, probably about Joe Biden, probably about policies and everything, pretty close to the vest, which those people do exist. But that doesn't mean that they don't have political biases. I think that the idea that it would be very difficult to get an unbiased jury is one of the main reasons why they are going through and making this happen in Manhattan, where they feel like they can rely on the jury to make something that is a little bit ridiculous potentially find a conviction. Fox News is reporting on this morning. Second juror was excused from the jury in former President Trump's criminal trial on Thursday after it was revealed the man was once arrested for tearing down right-leaning political advertisements. Juror number four, who was selected and sworn in on Tuesday, was excused by the judge on Thursday morning. The man had been arrested in Westchester, New York, for tearing down political advertisements, according to a prosecutor from Alvin Bragg's office. One of the prosecutors said, "I actually believe the propaganda that was being ripped down was political posters that were on the right, the political right." Steinglass said that after additional research, it also appeared that the juror's wife had been previously accused of or involved in a corruption inquiry that needed a deferred prosecution agreement with the district attorney's office. Jurors are asked on a questionnaire to list whether they or someone close to them have ever been arrested. Juror number four was excused shortly after juror number two was excused. Juror number two admitted that she could no longer be fair. Since Tuesday? It just seems like a short amount of time to be like, you know what? On second thought. I also do believe that a lot of these people who are going to participate in this jury eventually are very much so putting their private life on the line to potentially not really exist in that capacity any longer. If you've ever watched any of these incredibly high profile cases unfold, you know that the jurors become an element of focus. They come out with books after the fact, and if you might not be the one who's writing the book, you might not be the one who's profiting off the book, but you also might be the one who is written about in the other person who is sitting on the jury in their book. And if you're not really interested in that, then you may not want to find yourself in the jury, and maybe as the pressure mounts, you might just come out and say, you know what, I don't think I can be biased anymore, because you don't want to be involved in it. I think it goes to the political consequence of what we are watching unfold with this lawfare against Donald Trump, that the stakes are really high. And it's not just we're not just talking about a charge of hush money that was paid right before the 2016 campaign. I mean, think about the criminals in the state of New York, in New York City. Think about the criminals who are arrested and released. And arrested again and released again and released again and released again. Think about what you are allowed to get away with in New York City. And then think about what the DA, Alvin Bragg, has done to make sure that Donald Trump has to spend 6 weeks or whatever it is in a courtroom during this trial. It's absurd. Everybody can see that it's absurd. That doesn't mean that you're going to all of a sudden love Donald Trump or you're going to all of a sudden vote for Donald Trump. But the absurdity of it is certainly something that is recognizable to a lot of people. I was talking, this was earlier this week, I think it was, about Stephen A. Smith and how I was listening to him on a Patrick Bet-David podcast, and he was talking about he's not a Trump guy. He's not a Republican guy, but I don't think that he's a hard left progressive guy. He recently came out on his podcast and said this.
To my liberal friends out there, all you're doing is showing that you're scared you can't beat them on the issues and the merits. That's why he keeps saying it's a political campaign against me. That's why he keeps saying they can't beat me at the election, at the polls. This is the only way they could do it. And if you don't put him in jail, and he still goes from being the presumptive GOP nominee to the official GOP nominee, and he goes to the polls, even though he was going to whine about winning and being rigged again, you have given more fodder to that argument.
Stephen A. Smith says he can't understand why the Democrats don't want to just try to beat him politically. Stephen A. Smith is watching this going, fight him fair. Don't fight him like this. And he knows that the more this goes on and the closer we get to the election, especially if Donald Trump ends up being acquitted, exonerated, whatever it might be, in any of these court cases, and if we listen to what Neil Gorsuch was saying up from the Supreme Court about some of the things involved in the Jack Smith trial in D.C., that could be weakening as well. Of course, there's an immunity question that needs to be answered and potentially would be answered by the Supreme Court at some point in time. That's not going to happen until the end of June. So when you are constantly in a position to question the fairness of whether or not what they're doing to Donald Trump is even legally allowed, if they're manufacturing this as they go on, you have to ask yourself how many voters out there are just going to say, I don't believe you. They're going to put themselves into a position where they're going to question the whole system. And I do think that there is something that people can relate to questioning the government, not trusting the government to be in the best interest of the American people, to be in a position to adhere to the Constitution. Remember, in a we the people scenario, it's we the people, but as a republic, we are governed by the Constitution. You can't have an overbloated government that is so big, that is so large, that it becomes so strong in the position that it can control the American people, and the American people have no recompense. And when we cover news stories of other countries where they imprison, literally imprison, political opponents, there's threat of jail time that is connected to the gag order that was placed on Donald Trump on a hush money trial from a pre-2016 election situation that was not important enough to protect the American people from Donald Trump until now. I mean, everybody can see what that is. Everybody can look into what that is and know that it is unfair, that it is biased. And Stephen A. Smith is right. Even if everything was above board, even if everything that this Justice Department was doing to Donald Trump was because this is justice, this is what justice looks like, they haven't gone about it in a timely manner to push these things onto Donald Trump to make him answer for him. The second that he got out of office, you can't indict a sitting president. But how come the hush money trial wasn't being thrust upon Donald Trump in February of 2021 if it was so important? It's because the only thing that matters is keeping him from being the president of the United States. And as Stephen A. Smith recognizes, they're using it against him to make sure that he can't win. And I think that voters are starting to see very clearly in a bipartisan way that this is what's going on. You've probably seen it for a while. I've seen it for a while as well, along there with you, that this isn't fair. I think more and more people are seeing it with each passing day. And people like Alvin Bragg, I mean, these are like in-kind donations to the Trump campaign. And we'll see what ends up happening shortly. But how do you seat a jury with 12 people who are impartial to Donald Trump? Who are there 12 people in Manhattan that are impartial to Donald Trump? And then if they don't know about Donald Trump, would you want them judging your fate? I sure wouldn't. All right, let's take a quick break. Hans von Spakovsky is going to be with us when we come back. We're going to ask him about this trial. We're going to ask him how we get to a fair jury. And we're going to see where his focus is right now on this trial and maybe some of the other court cases that might be facing Donald Trump in the near future. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. I know we got weather coming in, so keep your eyes in the skies. We will do the same here in downtown St. Louis. Let's get to our guest. Hans von Spakovsky is with us again today. It's Thursday. Hans, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Of course. You know, we're watching the jury selection process as it maneuvers in Manhattan, finding 12 people who are like, oh, I'm totally impartial to Donald Trump. I have no strong opinions about that. How are they going to get a jury to judge this circus of a court case and get through this process so that they can get on with it?
Well, I actually think the jury selection is going to go a lot faster than people are predicting. And let's make a correction here. They're not selecting a jury. They're deselecting a jury because, you know, they have this huge pool. And what's happening is Donald Trump and his lawyers are trying to weed out the potential jurors they don't want. And they've only got a limited number of what are called peremptory challenges that they can use. And they've already used, I think, about half of them. So, you know, they're going to get to the point where they're no longer going to be able to challenge particular jurors. And they may get people on there who are, you know, biased and partisan. In fact, I just don't think they can get an unbiased jury in Manhattan.
I agree. And, you know, we've already seen two of them that have been, as I understand it, selected, have backed out for whatever, or been bounced. The court case itself, what is the timeline that exists where we'll have a resolution, at least on this portion of the case? I'm certain there will likely be an appeal. Is this something that we're going to see kind of go rapid fire here shortly, or is it going to go on and on and on?
I think by the end of next week, they'll have selected a jury and then they will get moving. I think, look, this is in many ways a limited trial. In other words, this is not a really complicated case at all. Mm-hmm. And I think they could get through this case in a month to a month and a half. So I suspect by mid-June, we could actually have a final verdict in the case.
Let me have your thoughts, Hans, on the gag order on Donald Trump, his continued reposting of things on his Truth Social, comparative to, I know I've heard a lot of people talk about how Michael Cohen is out there and he's running his mouth as much as he can. And then I've had other people say, but he's not the one who's being charged here, so there's a different expectation for a witness than the defendant. What do you make of the gag order, its position in this trial, and the way it's being applied? Is it being applied fairly?
I don't think it's being applied fairly. And the people who say that, well, there shouldn't be a gag order on Cohen, Cohen's the main witness. And if he's out there on social media, then he is putting out all kinds of opinions, statements, claims that potential jurors could see and which could bias them. And in fact, that's the whole basis for the supposed gag order on Trump, is that, well, he could be out there saying, making and saying statements that could prejudice potential jurors. Well, how's that any different from Mike Cohen, who's the main witness in the case, doing the same thing? And look, defendants should be given very great leeway to say what they believe is going on in a case, because they're the ones that potentially can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And they have very substantive due process rights and a First Amendment right. You know, as long as they're not out there making threats in which they're urging people, for example, to commit violence against judges or jurors, other than that, they should be able to criticize the prosecutor, the bias that they perceive of the prosecutor and the judge. And I just don't think a gag order is appropriate that goes beyond saying, well, you can't threaten anyone with physical violence. That should be the limit of it. And Trump hasn't been doing that.
Speaking with Hans von Spakovsky right now, the senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and former DOJ lawyer as well. Hans, I want to shift over to some of the things that Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch said about this D.C. case, because I find this interesting, but I need your legal expertise in order to explain to us exactly what Gorsuch was saying when he was talking about other types of disruptions, other types of protests, peaceful protests. We've seen a lot of those right now across the country, disrupting traffic, disrupting the flow of how people are moving from A to B during the day. But he's talking about something specific here. Let's listen to his words.
If I might. So what does that mean for the breadth of this statute? Would a sit-in that disrupts a trial or access to a federal courthouse qualify? Would a heckler in today's audience qualify, or at the State of the Union address? Would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify for 20 years in federal prison?
A very specific question there at the end. Hans, what were you making of the Gorsuch questions to the U.S. Solicitor General?
I think he's raising questions about how this particular federal statute is being read way too broadly. The issue is that it's basically a criminal violation to disrupt an official proceeding. But the Supreme Court is listening to arguments from the U.S. Justice Department that that applies to just about anything. And the defendants in this case are saying, look, by disrupting an official proceeding, they were talking about, for example, when it comes to Congress, disrupting an actual hearing that's going on, not just in general, staging a protest where you're saying, well, you don't like what's going on. You don't like what Congress is doing. You don't like what the courts are doing and how they're handling things. The reading that the Justice Department is giving it could turn a vast majority of Americans into federal criminals for protesting all kinds of goings on by their government.
I'm kind of intrigued at the I don't know if assault is probably too strong of a word, but it seems as though the First Amendment is in question with almost everything that Donald Trump is being accused of here. And, you know, gosh, my civics teaching, Constitution teaching husband would shame me for not being able to list. I know there's, five things, I think, that the First Amendment protects, and there's an acronym and everything. Freedom of the press is certainly one of them. Freedom of speech, freedom to petition, or to protest. There are a lot of things that the First Amendment protects, and it's supposed to protect. It's supposed to make sure that the government is limited, not that the people are limited. And when you go by case by case by case in Georgia, Donald Trump was vocalizing his disbelief that the election was fair. He was speaking on it in the January 6th situation in the D.C. courts with Jack Smith. It seems like there's protest stuff that is there. I mean, it seems as though to a constitutional novice like myself that they have a big problem with the First Amendment, and they're bringing their problem into the court system, and that Americans should be paying very close attention to what they do with these First Amendment rights.
Oh, you may be categorizing yourself as a novice, but you have a better reading of the First Amendment than all of these government prosecutors who are trying to criminalize First Amendment activity.
I'm going to clip that and give that to my husband.
Jack Smith and particularly Fannie Willis in Georgia are prime examples of that. And look, we're seeing this everywhere. Look, this is happening in the courts with criminalizing First Amendment activity that should be protected there. But think about the kind of speech codes that have been put in schools, universities, colleges all over the country that violate basic First Amendment rights. Think about how the government right now, the federal government, we've got a case before the U.S. Supreme Court that recently was argued in which the federal government said, oh, there was nothing wrong with them telling social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, now X, to restrict and censor the opinions of Americans. They think, oh, yeah, the First Amendment doesn't keep us from doing that. The First Amendment is under severe attack all over the country.
Yeah. I will be very interested to see how the courts end up wringing this one out, because the American people as a whole should be, if they can do it to Donald Trump, they can do it to anybody else. And you know, this is a question that I often ask you, but I always think it bears repeating. Something has to change. There has to be a reset of sorts in the court systems in our Department of Justice in order to make sure that justice is blind, that it doesn't have a political affiliation. I would assume that's not going to happen if Joe Biden gets reelected. But if a president were to get elected and be able to affect the change that needed to affect to get our justice system back on track, what are some of the first things that you'd recommend that they do?
They would have to start with cleaning house at the Department of Justice and the FBI.
Is that a big move? Is that like a broad cleaning house?
That is a broad cleaning house. And that means, I'll just give you one example. Every single agent at the FBI, every single lawyer at the Justice Department who has been involved in any way with speaking secretly behind the scenes to social media companies to censor the opinions of Americans, every single one of them should be fired. They all should not be in the federal government where they've got the power to do that kind of thing. And that's just a start on the kind of things that need to be done. Mm.
Probably start a whole new left-leaning cable news network for all the people who now have to be like commentators as they got bounced out of the Department of Justice. But I'd be here to watch that happen. Hans, thank you for being with us here today. We always love to talk to you.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Bye-bye. Hans von Spakovsky is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, former FEC commissioner and DOJ lawyer. Very, very well-versed on everything going on in the Georgia case. And he is licensed to practice law in Georgia as well. So he knows that region incredibly well. Always love to have him on the show and discuss the latest happenings. Let's take a quick break. We come back. Wiggins America in studio. He, I guess, is taking the lead yesterday from when we were talking about the elephant in the room, which was apparently cold turkey. I don't even know. Are we allowed to joke about this? I feel like we should be able to. Did he go home and tell his family that he has a drag name?
I don't know.
I told my husband in the Ryan Wiggins or in the Annie Fry Show trivia category, what is Ryan Wiggins' drag character's name? It's Cold Turkey. That's like one that you got to file away. Well, he's got more phrases that people commonly use, and he's going to provide us the origins of those. Wiggins America, when we come back. Don't go away.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
Love that. Makes me feel like I'm 40 again.
I just had to.
What I have here is based on yesterday's conversation, the 2 o'clock hour, if you missed it, Annie shared with us the history of some popular phrases. And we had to guess where they came from and so forth, and we did a great job.
It wasn't like a game.
It wasn't like a game show or anything.
Needed to do something at 2:25. That was really it.
And I said, boy, that was great. I'm going to take your lead, and I'm going to look up about a billion more of them. And so I am going to read. Do we want to recap yesterday's at all?
No.
Because
it's
didn't include those.
People can listen.
Yeah,
that would be awesome if you started with the same things we did last time. Yeah. We're pretty close.
For Wiggins America, I'm going to do what Annie did yesterday.
Yeah. The exact same article.
Brad, you summed it up.
She really liked this article. I think I'm going to do it again. For somebody's birthday. Let's go. Okay, first one.
You know exactly what I want. It's like we're in sync. You and me. I'm Justin Timberlake, though.
And I am Nick, the cute one.
I thought Nick is Backstreet Boys.
I thought he was Joey.
I'm not.
I guess it all depends on who you're attracted to.
He's the fat one. Joey Fatone.
Oh!
Man!
I need to leave. It's gonna get we got a long segment here.
Yeah.
Gonna get uncomfortable.
This is going to be a day. I'm promising you right now, if you can listen to this whole show, you should. I don't know what's going
to
happen, and that's the point. Yeah, Annie.
I'm trying to get out of here.
If you can stay, that'd be great. All right, the first one is, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Any guesses as to where don't throw the baby out with the bathwater might have came from?
I have a guess. They used to not change the bathwater. Lots of babies. You'd go through and use the same bathwater over and over and over again. You could see the baby in the bathwater.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It says that they would fill the tub with hot water back when it was a little harder to get hot water. And the man of the house had the privilege of the nice clean water first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you would bathe the baby last.
Then, exactly. Then all the other sons and men would go next. Then the women, and finally the children, and last of all, the baby.
Yeah.
And by the time they washed the baby, the water was usually so dirty that they'd say, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater because if you dip the baby down, you couldn't even see him in the water.
How long ago was this a thing?
I don't know. It didn't
the
say
1980s.
Years. Yeah. Yeah. This was back like when we were little.
Yeah, when we were kids.
Forever ago.
It was so dirty water. Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. Downtown St. Louis.
Do you remember indoor plumbing coming in the mid-90s?
I do.
Yeah. But the connection sound it would make when
we
you turn
off. So
that was
excited.
The internet. That's
it was
different.
Just frustrating having to throw your chamber pot out in the street every.
That was frustrating. I remember that.
You gotta be
you're not
careful
supposed
when you're
to throw
down.
The chamber pot out with the
the poop. 90s were a weird time. We were getting plumbing indoors. We were very excited about that. The nation was crazy about Urkel.
Only women participated in women's sports.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ancient.
Ancient.
Oh my goodness.
Next one. It's raining cats and dogs.
Oh, I've heard this one before, but I don't remember what it was.
I have no clue where this came from.
Houses had thatched roofs back in the 90s, Leah. thick straw piled high with no wood underneath.
It was the nice houses.
Right, yeah. Most people just slept outside.
They didn't have a roof.
It was you were rich if you had a roof.
Caves.
Most people just had walls.
Yeah.
It was the only place for animals to get warm up there on that thatched roof. So all the cats and other small animals, like mice and bugs, would live kind of in the roof. And when it rained, it became slippery, and sometimes the animals would slip and fall off the roof. Hence the saying, it's raining cats and dogs. Yay.
Gosh, I'm glad I know that now.
I feel enriched.
Just in case I encounter it later today, I'll be like, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
So now people just use that as a euphemism.
That's right. Yeah. And it used to be that it would actually physically rain cats and dogs.
Yeah.
How blessed we are now. How blessed. Bring home the bacon.
Hunting?
People
say
that?
I was going to say it had to do something with boar hunting.
Not exactly. No, it says that sometimes when people were rich enough or they'd gotten like a windfall of money or they'd had a good season, they would be able to buy pork, which was apparently pretty special. And when visitors came over, they would actually hang up their bacon to show it off. It was a sign of wealth if a man could bring home the bacon. They would then cut off a little bit to share with guests, and they would sit around, and here's another phrase, chew the fat. How about that? Leah. Next one.
Bite. G-Wib says the B. I'm here for you today, G-Wibs.
Okay, how about bite the bullet?
This was like doctor would give the guy a bullet when they were operating on him.
So they could bite.
So they could bite down and like to help with the pain.
Pain.
You got it.
Release the pressure of your angst on the bullet you were biting.
Doesn't it seem like you could bite anything though? Like why a bullet?
Because it's not gonna crumble. No, you can't just bite anything.
Well, you can bite like a rag or something, you know? It says in the olden days when doctors were short on anesthesia or during a battle, they would ask the patient to bite down on a bullet to distract from the pain.
Maybe there are bullets around in a battle?
I was going to say, if it's Civil War, those are lead bullets.
Mm-hmm. It says that the first recorded use of the phrase was...
Now we just keep our lead in our Stanleys.
1891, in some book called The Light That Failed. Doesn't mean that was the first time it was ever used. That's just the first recorded use of it. Next one is holding... This one I love. Holding a wake. Does anybody know where this came from? The term wake.
Didn't they lay them out to make sure they were dead?
Yes. But do you know why?
Because they're afraid of vampires.
Because they thought that they were dead?
They're afraid of vampires. They thought that they were dead, but they were not quite sure. So apparently lead cups were common to drink ale or whiskey out of. And the combination of both alcohol and lead cups would sometimes knock people out for days at a time. And they would assume they were dead. And so
they had to be sure.
Somebody walking along the road would pick them up if they were just laying there and prepare them for burial. And they'd lay them out just usually on a kitchen table for a couple days. And the family would gather around to have a wake to hope that they actually weren't dead. Hence, holding a wake. This one is another one of my favorites here. Saved by the Bell.
It's boxing, isn't it?
No.
It's a good guess.
So.
It's a good guess. That's what I would have thought. It's not.
What is it? Nobody wants to sit here and listen to me think.
England is old and small, and the local folks started running out of places to bury people.
Yeah.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yes, and that's because John said, Saved by the Bell, also to be sure you weren't dead after being buried.
He's got it.
Yep.
So they would dig up coffins at the time and would take the bones out to a bone house, is what they called it, and reuse the grave. When reopening some of these old coffins, they said about one out of every 25 coffins had scratch marks on the inside of them. And they realized they had been burying people alive, similar to the wake thing.
It's a really, really happy segment.
Yeah. So,
it's just like, oh, Annie, you're turning 40. Let's do things about death. All right.
Yeah, there's a theme here.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Over the hill.
They would tie a string around the wrist of the corpse afterwards. And then they would lead the string up out of the ground and tie it to a bell. Someone would have to sit out in the graveyard all night waiting to see if the person woke up for probably a couple days afterwards.
Man.
That's also where the term graveyard shift comes from. And they would listen for the bell, and if it rang, you were saved by the bell. And if you looked exactly like somebody, that you were called a dead ringer. Isn't that crazy? I love that one. What's the matter, guys? Cat got your tongue?
Yep.
That's how you do radio professionally. The old English Navy used to whip a cat of nine tails to people. You knew this. Kinda.
It's disgusting.
The pain was so severe when they would whip people
again
that it caused the victim to stay quiet for a long time. And I don't know if maybe it had to do with actually whipping their tongue, but
the cat got the tongue.
Yeah, it would. It would.
Okay,
cat
moving
got
on.
Your tongue. All right, all right.
Are any of these happy?
No.
Okay.
Die Hard. Speaking of, we're sticking with the theme here. This will not be on Wiggins' best of volume. Yes, it will. Die Hard.
What did you just say?
This, somebody said in the chat, this will not be on Wiggins' best of volume mix, LOL.
It's not what you just said.
Whatever. Die Hard. Hmm? Mm. Bruce Willis made up the term. No.
I mean, it tracks.
Yeah.
While it typically refers to someone with strong dedication to a particular set of beliefs, the term diehard originally had a series of much more literal meanings. Its earliest incarnation in the 1700s was the expression describing condemned men who struggled the longest when they were hanged. So if you got hanged and you wouldn't die in the 1700s, you were called a diehard. Thank you. Thank you. And there's only like three more of these. This is great stuff. Paint the town red.
Doja Cat.
Doja Cat is correct. The phrase, paint the town red. This is killer, no filler. Most likely owes its origin to one legendary night of drunkenness in 1837. How did you guys not know this? The Marquis of Waterford, a known drunk and mischief maker in England, led a group of friends on a night of drinking through the English town of Melton Mowbray. I can't believe you didn't know this. The bender culminated in vandalism and Waterford and his fellow revelers knocked over flower pots, pulled knockers off of doors. I don't like the idea that they were grabbing knockers. And broke the windows of some of the town's buildings. To top it all off, the mob literally painted a toll gate and several homes red. Therefore, paint the town red. There's only a minute left.
What do you got against grabbing knockers?
Only sober. It was that they were drunk. And they, who knows?
Ask the door for consent.
Right.
Okay.
Upper crust. Last one. And this is like the worst one. Bread was divided according to status. Workers got the burnt bottom of the loaf. The family in the middle got the mid-die, and the guests, or the richest people, would get the upper crust.
Maybe just don't burn the bread.
That's what I thought. Like, maybe just learn to bake instead of coming up with these dumb phrases to get around your bad baking.
Let's talk to Tyrus.
There you go.
Let's talk to Tyrus and Congressman Mike Bost. That's about it. That's about what I got. In a minute. Don't go away.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.